Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gorgeous George and Coz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Thursday morning. We are excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we get going. UFC 300, the final push. We're going to make it today. And it's also our 17-year anniversary of doing the show. That's right. 17 years ago, Goes, myself, Frank Trigg, who now most of you know as MMA ref and Hollywood stuntman, Frank Trigg. But he was one of the top welterweights in the world back in the day. Middleweight as well, won a couple of major titles. And yeah, he was with us for 2 years. And then that's about the time we slowly migrated from Tag Radio to MMA Junkie Radio. So I'm sure we'll have some time to look back on that as well. We're pretty proud of these accomplishments that come along the way. We'll start the show, and it's going to be a good one. All right, Ghost, so let's maybe we'll start with a little bit of nostalgia. We'll do the meat and potatoes, which will be UFC 300, and then maybe we'll finish with nostalgia. I'm not even going to go with the old, what's your favorite memory of the show or whatever. But when I did say happy 17 years or whatever, I'm sure a lot of memories flood you. What kind of just jumps out at you?
The friendships that I've made from the show, I think. That's probably the first thing that jumps out. The second thing is we're coming up on UFC 300, and UFC 100 was kind of a milestone for us where we just met a lot of people that weekend, I remember. And so, yeah, those two things kind of stand out.
You know, oh, no, it was, okay, that wasn't the first Junkie Gathering, was it? Wasn't there an unofficial Junkie Gathering before the official Junkie Gatherings?
Yeah, we kind of call UFC 100 the unofficial one.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, because there was a lot of people in town kind of early, and we just all hung out for a couple days before the UFC 100 show. And then not everybody went to the fights. Remember, they showed the fights on the beach?
Mm-hmm.
So then we all went there.
Right. That's when, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was that. No, it couldn't have been because it involved the Korean zombie. What was the name of the guy from CNN that passed away? He used to be a food critic.
Anthony Bourdain. Actually, Bourdain.
I was saying Jourdain in my head. I go, no, that ain't it, though. But that's why I'm glad you chimed in.
It might have been that weekend.
No, because I don't think the Korean zombie was around back then.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
He came to see the Korean zombie.
Yeah.
What I do remember is we started on April 11th, 2007, and UFC 69 had just taken place. That was the event where Josh Koscheck shoved, or was it Diego shoved Kos, right?
Yeah.
And he almost knocked him off the stage, and the stage was kind of elevated up. And I think Bruce Buffer saved him, didn't he?
I don't remember, but he came pretty close, and the drop was a significant drop.
Yeah, that was a good shove. And Koscheck probably would have been hurt. I mean, these dudes are pretty tough. They're used to their bumps. But yeah, it was elevated, and you just never know how someone falls. But that was basically the co-main event of Matt Serra knocking out GSP. So the guy that we said, hey, after 30 years, we think he's the best ever. Our first show, we had to recap him getting his ass knocked out.
Yeah, and a lot of people didn't even know. There was a Pride show going on the same night. So there were a lot of people in Japan that were getting that news and just weren't believing it. They were thinking
they gave it to Mauro Ranallo and Frank Trigg, didn't you?
Yeah, they actually hung up the phone not believing it. Like, I was like, okay, you know, I think I've given you enough information. I get it. You think it's a troll, but like, we're far past that. They still hung up the phone like, nah, he's just playing.
That conjures up thoughts of how much worldwide connectivity has improved, because they had no stream to see the, you know, okay, let's just say in the world of pirate streams, there probably wasn't a healthy one from Japan for them to do that. There wasn't a way for them to pay for ESPN Plus to do that, or DirecTV streaming to do that, or anything like that. You literally had to press refresh. You couldn't even, I mean, I think Twitter had launched, but most people weren't on it yet. So you had to rely on basically a text from someone, or that play-by-play that on our website, MMA Junkie, is still heavy for traffic when it comes to traffic.
Yeah. I don't know if Twitter was around, but
it was. I think I've looked at it before, and it was launched in 2007. I don't think we got onto it till 2009. I think we talked Frank Trigman to do it. He thought it was dumb, and the next thing you know, he became enamored with it once he realized, holy cow, this thing's a monster.
Yeah.
And so let me just add something to that. Now you can obviously watch it worldwide. The sport's bigger. There's more fans, but for those that choose still not to or don't have access, but you have access to the internet, don't forget, Goz and I will be doing a watch-along on Saturday. It'll start at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Why the early start time? Because usually we do the main card, which starts at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, and then we do what's called the featured prelims. Look at Mom. Mom keeps pushing sugar on me. She's handing me a dessert right now. The featured prelims are four fights, right? That come before that. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. That's what we usually say. This card's so deep and so special and historic that Goz and I decided to do the whole card. So, yes, you heard us right. 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And right before that will be Fada Hanoun's preview show, which I'll be on 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. It's going to be a long day for all of us. A long week at that point, really. Shout out to editorial, the reporters, the videographers. I mean, those guys are grinding. Check out the YouTube channel. It's full of so much content. Yesterday, all 26 fighters did the individual interviews. Like, that's how deep this card is, that they said, no, we got to talk to all of them, starting with Figueiredo and Garbrandt. They're the first fight of the night. Two former world champions, two guys that have heavy hands in the lighter weight classes. They kick off the event. How are Goz and I, how are we supposed to just not be there for that? So that's why it'll be an extended watch along. We'll do a lot of heavy promoting on it in the social media here to close out the final few days. I mean, who doesn't know about it, right? UFC 300. But in case you didn't know, maybe you just came back from a war or something, or just came out of a coma. I don't know. But it's this Saturday, and we'll talk about it in just a second. Just in final closing, goes, congrats to you. You are obviously my other half of the show. Same so congrats to you, the listeners, the platform given to us by USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie. And we could sit here and probably spend a whole hour thanking people. Frank Trigg always gets a special shout out. All of our co-hosts along the way. I don't think I can remember them all. I'll try. I know Mark Lehman did a 6-week stint with you while I was in Brazil. Joey Varner did a 3-week stint with you while I was in Peru. John Morgan, of course, had a nice stretch with us as well. Dan Tom had a 2-year stretch with us as well. And so many co-hosts. That's where I definitely won't go down the road of trying to do that. Goz even had his own show with our good friend Alton, the Goz and Alton show. They probably hosted 10 of them themselves, or a dozen of themselves. And those were always cool. Jeff Kane did a lot of co-hosting with us. Yeah. He's with MMA Weekly, but he was a really nice helping hand at the beginning of all this. Dan Stubb gets a shout out for being the guy that saved us. We were close to unplugging and not doing anything, and he's the one that suggested Tag Radio become MMA Junkie Radio. Our current bosses, Simon Simano, who still gives us tremendous support to this day. with the show, expanding our roles in the video and helping us, you know, evolve our careers. So he's awesome. I can't say enough about that guy. And, you know, another guy that I really, really was a fan of goes is Chris Perrone. He was there from the time that we joined USA Today up until about a year ago. And he always helped and lent a hand to us. So this is probably where I've forgotten a few people, you know, obviously our girlfriends. Well, Goz has probably had a few there. He might not have the name. I think Juliet's been for most of the ride for mine, but for Goz, he's had a couple different gals in his life. Our parents always supportive. The fans, if you don't exist, we actually would just be talking in the mics, just him and I, just to have fun, I guess, but we'd have no audience. So thank you to anyone that's ever listened to one episode or all of them. Goz, go ahead. What do you got to say?
No, like, you know, it's funny. I guess it doesn't have to do with our anniversary, but it just so happens that, like, a lot of old names have kind of creeped up in the last couple of days. And you're right. It's just like you hear about how they heard about the show and then how they passed it on to, like, a buddy of theirs at work or something, you know. And it sounds like something so small, but it can become so big so quickly when you do that. And in a way, we're sort of experiencing all that all over again, because what we're doing with Spinning Backclick is very similar, right? Like we created something and it's evolving throughout the years and it's changing formats, and, you know, the same way the show's kind of gone through multiple changes like that. So it's fun to kind of still have our show, which we love, and have this new show that we're also trying to mold. So, like, if you're a fan of this show, there's no reason why you shouldn't be a fan of the other one.
Yes. We are trying to grow the Spinning Backclick show on YouTube. It's very similar to our other shows that we did for so many years, because it's got the live component. It's live every Monday. We don't take calls, but we do grab questions and comments from the chat room that accompanies it. As the show grows, obviously it's going to become more difficult unless someone kind of maybe can do that. But for me to remember who I'm supposed to go to, when I'm supposed to pivot to the next topic and still grab stuff, it kind of throws me off a little bit. So that's something we can deal with. Obviously, we want more listeners no matter what, but we'll always try and make you all a part of the show. Hopefully that show can be, I'll say this now, Goz. I bet you that show could become a daily show one day. For now, I'm just shooting for a second one at some point during the week, because I love the live component. And we have so much talent over at MMA Junkie that I'm sure we could pull it off. Now, it also stretches the resources, so it would have to make sense. I get it. But once there's enough news that we can do this, and obviously if you all enjoy it, meaning it equals traffic, then sure, that I could see that happening. But we still got our two days a week podcast here, like the one we're doing now, and Spinning Backclick. And then once I get back to Vegas, we'll get back to doing some off-guard stuff, going to the studio over at Sticky Paws. My mom asked me about why haven't you guys gone back to Mandalay Bay. The simple answer was, when it was our studio and we could leave our equipment there, it was great. Now it's a shared studio. So to lug equipment back and forth, because you don't want to lose anything. We lost a headset once and it broke my heart. Those things are like $200-$300. And, you know, that's not bad over 11 years, I suppose. And it might have been a simple mistake. Someone just might have thought it was theirs, or someone just snagged it. I don't know. But Goz and I would walk in on a Monday. Sometimes that door was still open from the show that came in on a Saturday. But yet we still managed to be, you know, hold on to a lot of stuff that we had. We had some expensive memorabilia from over the years, stuff that was given to us. And so it was a lot different to come in, plug and play, but meaning our laptops, but the equipment was stationary. That's the biggest thing. That, and I guess, you know, we set up studios at home, so it's just not as easy. But, you know, I started going down memory lane with mom, and I go, it wasn't just COVID that hit and shut down the whole strip, it shut down the hotel. If you'll recall, Goz, that was March of 2020. people didn't start getting jabs in their arms. You and I got lucky somehow. We got early jabs, like in February, I think, of 2021. Mm-hmm. But before then, when a fighter went to a hotel, he or she wasn't leaving. So even if you said, hey, you at fighter hotel right down the street, come on down and do the thing. Even if they would love to hang out with Goz and I, they didn't want to risk catching COVID and not fighting. And I couldn't believe when I was talking about how the world was 3 years ago, you know, and how much more we know now. But that's literally what we went through. It was the hand we were dealt.
Yeah. I mean, well, the world just changed very rapidly. Because if you put yourself in the perspective of a fighter, you know, now you're saying, okay, want to co-host an episode with us, which is an hour, used to be two. All right. So I got to block out time, get in my car, drive to Mandalay Bay. I got to pay for parking now because now that's a thing in Vegas. I have to go to your studio, sit there, do that. That's like almost 3 hours of that person's time altogether when you put it all together. Versus what they do today where the UFC goes, all right, we got a block of 3 hours. You're going to do 6 interviews. And they just go from person to person and they never leave their house. They don't need a babysitter. They don't need to check with anyone or, you know, they'll be here that entire time. And that's just the way the world has changed. So now if you do that, because we still do, like we've had people in studio. We did the New England Cartel not too long ago. It's still possible, but it's just you're asking a lot more out of the fighter. And to do that from, you know, kind of a day-to-day thing just doesn't work anymore for people. And then for George and I, let's just say it's that one interview. For us to get down there, bring equipment, set up, all that, what would take us 15 minutes just here, the way we do it? So it's just kind of an evolution of the world. It's sad. I personally hate talking about it when people ask me, but it can be kind of sad because what happened was we never really had like a chance to say goodbye, you know, like a goodbye show or something. Like we literally left thinking we could be back in a week or something. And then, you know, literally the hotel closed, like all hotels closed. They had chains around the doors and everything. And then when we got the okay to come back, it was, you can come back, but you have to wear a mask. And I mean, look.
I forgot about that.
We can't do a show like that. Like, that's not going to sound.
Yeah. Good. Do you remember that rule, dude? Okay. Oh my God. Like I said, we could spend a whole hour talking about this. Okay. I remember that. Okay. We obviously didn't want to do that. We got to a point where they could give us the pass not to do that. But for some reason, the way the studio was situated, here it was, we were not necessarily on casino floor, but we were part of the sportsbook. And if you were on the casino or the sportsbook, they could receive a fine, the hotel. So the hotel couldn't risk it. They were like, we get it. You're in a studio. You know, the fighter has accepted your invite, so they trust you trust them not to give it to each other. It could just be you three, you, Goz, and fighter, we'll say. But it don't matter, because if someone comes from I guess whoever was over, you know, the government, we'll just say the government, some government official comes and watches, because you can only have so many people in the, oh my God, I can't believe we went through all this, you can only have so many people in the damn hotel. This is when it was first starting back up. They could receive a heavy fine, and that would obviously not be good. So we had to play ball, and that's why it just became more of a pain in the ass. And then another show jumped in there, and other shows jumped in there, and they had their equipment, and it was just, you know, we had 11 years, guys, where it was just ours. I think what I miss more about, and I shouldn't say this, but I just miss the fact that we couldn't watch Sunday football in there. And all the big events and March Madness, you know, that one kind of hurt. But no, of course it was the studio itself. But see, the studio didn't take a hit because we kept the show going. And now we were able to do it from home, which most people are doing. And we obviously grew in different ways. We did more video. Could I go back to it? I'm sure I could. If it meant it was good for Goz and I, the show, for Junkie as a whole, whether it was back with Sirius XM or just in another way, you know, maybe through it being more lucrative being down there. I don't know. I guess it would be something. You know, it's not like I minded it. We got to get in our cars and drive to the Strip. It was the first hotel you see coming from the south, the major hotels. We had a nice back way to get in. So it's not like we spent hours getting there. And then we made a lot of friends there, you know. And then once we were there, it was kind of cool. You know, they had some great restaurants. And a lot of times these fighters would stay after and have breakfast or an early lunch. And or games would be going off as we were doing the show or golf or, you know, big events. It was fun. It was fun, man. Little memory row here. But yeah, I forgot about all that, man. The mask.
Yeah, there was just a lot of things kind of in the way. And then as all that happened, the world, not just, you know, what we do, the world evolved, right? Like if you watch Fox News, if you watch CNN, whatever, back in the day, it would be weird if they interviewed somebody that was on a computer, you know, at their home like that. They just didn't do that. Now it's okay. Now it's even okay when, like, oh, we've lost connection or whatever. Like, but that's not as big of a deal as we're back when we were growing up. It was like, what kind of mom and pop show is this? Like, what are they doing? There's a kid in the background. The world just changed. It evolved, and it evolved very quickly. And that's kind of the reason why we have to evolve with it and be able to adapt. And that's the one thing that we've always been really good at, is adapting to the situations. And so here we are, you know, we got lucky. We were actually building home studios about a month before all this went down. So it was an easy transition. I can't imagine what it would have been like if we had to start from zero.
Exactly. What we'll do is maybe next week, I'm going to try and remember. And I'm going to, I had some more questions that I wanted to ask you, but we're 21 minutes into this show. We really need to get to UFC 300, but I do want to drop one other thing on you. As former Trojan fans, this should hurt, but it doesn't. OJ Simpson died.
Did he? I thought he tweeted yesterday.
No, he died.
When did he die?
I guess this morning. I kind of had to
swore last
confirm
night.
It. And I looked in New York Post, The Guardian, ABC News. It was in our Slack channel. And
where are you, a former Trojan fan?
Is this some sort of a joke or what? But yeah, he passed away. 76 years old.
Why are you a former Trojan fan?
No. We're Trojan fans. USC football. I love it. I'm a former fan of this guy. He was actually one of my idols growing up because he was, you know, when I was a little kid, he was the, I knew him as the former Heisman Trophy winner. He won it the year I was born, so obviously I didn't see that. But he was like, when you were 5 or 6 years old and you're just starting to realize who's who, he was the shit over there at Buffalo. And he was on Hertz commercials, running through airports. And then he joined last year or two with the Niners, along with Joe Montana. That's when I became a Niners fan. He hadn't murdered anyone yet, allegedly. But, yeah, like, I think I even had a 32 USC shirt. He was just it. You know, it was a cool name, O.J. Simpson. He was fast. He used to run for the track team at USC as well. So he had blazing speed, great moves. They called him the Juice. I think he even did commercials for Pioneer Chicken. Like, he was just beloved. And then, of course, he transferred to the booth, and he kind of became a sideline reporter before the sideline reporters was taken over by the females now. Now I press you to find a male sideline reporter, they're far and few in between. That's more the role that's held down by a female on the commentary team. And, but yeah, he was one of the first to do that. I think it was for NBC or something like that. So, yeah, he passed away.
I saw, it was a tweet about an hour ago, but it was somebody saying that he passed away from his account.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was a 49er fan.
A 49? No, he was a 49er. He got traded to the 49ers or signed as a free agent. It was his final years. He had slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, there was just this, like, worlds colliding. Ronnie Lott had gotten drafted by the Niners, and I loved him as a Trojan. Simpson came over, and I thought, okay, you know, the Rams, who I used to cheer for at one point in time, every year they had holdouts. That team was tightwad city. And so they would lose athletes or they would just get a late start. They wouldn't sign until like week four. They had just come off a Super Bowl too against the Steelers. And Montana, I remember him doing a number on the Trojans a few times. And I just thought, man, we need a quarterback. I'd love to have a quarterback like him. So I kind of picketed against the Rams a little bit around the late 70s, early 80s. And because a few Trojans were, you know, over there, I was like, that's my team and California team. And yeah, I even cheered for the Raiders. I kind of was a California guy, L.A. guy a little bit. But so when the Raiders were in L.A., you know, I had considered maybe even making them my team. I might even have a Raider jersey somewhere, but because I love their image, you know. Remember, I was always a fan of heels in pro wrestling, and the Raiders are kind of like heels. So I kind of was digging that. But
well, you were a Marcus Allen guy too.
Marcus Allen, yeah, man. That's my dude right there. A USC Trojan running back who won the Heisman Trophy, was an MVP in the NFL. And only difference is he didn't slash anyone's throat.
Allegedly.
All right, UFC 300 goes. A lot of media went down yesterday. Kayla Harrison looking pretty lean. Really lean. But again, I can think of two athletes that dropped. And we always think, oh, man, that big athlete that's dropping to their normal weight, they're going to do great. Frankie Edgar. He might have done it too late in his career. But we all thought this guy's going to smash at 135. He was a 155 champ, a 145 title contender. Now he's at the regular class he should be at. Watch this. And it didn't work out. And then there was Patricio Frady going down to 135 after winning two titles in two different weight classes above. And he looked flat against Sergio Pettis. So now let's see what Kayla Harrison looks like, because she started as a lightweight, 155. She goes, this is my weight class. I don't lose weight for anyone. Finally, she tried 145 over at Invicta. Hey, that wasn't so bad. She looked lean. She looked great. She did well. It was just a one and done. And then now she's dropping to 135. So we shall see. A lot of comparisons are being made to Ronda Rousey. They're both judokas, Olympic caliber. And they both obviously have adapted and added jujitsu and some wrestling and some striking. Here's where I see the difference goes. Because, well, for one, Ollie's 8 years older or 9 years older when she stopped the other judoka. I think, Kayla learned from Rousey, right? Probably learned from that game plan a little bit. But, B, I think Kayla really has adapted the wrestling component. Because you can't be a beast on the ground if you can't get someone to the ground. And I think she knows that's the key. You can't strike with Holly. Even at 42 or whatever she's at, she does have – so from what – she's formidable in that aspect. You know, there's not really that knockout power. I suppose she could put the shin on your dome like she did to Rousey. But I'm talking about her hands mostly. She'll just outpoint you basically. But it's really hard to make up ground. But Kayla has worked on the wrestling. I've seen some good wrestling from her, and that's where I think it'll make the difference. She's about 10 years younger, and she has the experience of watching others not be able to get Holly Holm to the ground and then succumb.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Cub Swanson was another one, right? Didn't he go to 135 for one fight?
He did, yeah.
I think it was the Jonathan Martinez fight. He's got an opponent, by the way. He's got Andre Feely. But, yeah, Kayla Harrison – man, I'm not going to say I'm going to eat crow, but I will say this. In seeing her physique and her attitude, especially even on Embedded, she seems like she's in the right space, and she looked pretty good. Okay, now, all that being said, you can't sleep on the one thing that Holly Holm is just really good at, and that's gauging that distance, pumping that jab. And it's not... it's not Holly's first strike that matters. It's the second and third strikes. She will bait you into something and hit you hard with the second and third punches. And all that you gain through experience. And even though Holly Holm, the first part of her career wasn't MMA, it was boxing, right? And there is boxing and MMA. So she's been doing this for a really long time. And experience is just so... worth so much, man. And when you get one of these savvy veterans in there, I don't know. I just feel like Holly big cage, footwork.
Oh, good point about the big cage. This would be different if it was at the Apex, yeah.
Yeah, big. She's just gonna pick and choose her spots, and I think it's just too much for Kayla, honestly. But I wouldn't be shocked if Kayla gets a win. I think she deserves a lot of respect, beating someone like Holly Holm. And then the question is, what do you do? Because you can't fight backwards, right? Every opponent from then on has got to be bigger. So this is going to be a crazy year for Kayla Harrison, especially if she gets that win.
Mm-hmm. Because she can talk a good game, and she lights up when the mic is in front of her. And so it's very easy to pay attention and either fall in love with her or hate her. But that's what you want, is some sort of reaction. So she goes over the top. If she goes the Ben Askren route, remember when he submitted Robbie Lawler and he goes, "Hey, Dana, I thought you were going to give me some real competition." Right away, he had legions of fans booing because they're UFC fans. A lot, I'm sure, were Lawler fans. Other were just UFC fans. And so they couldn't wait for the next guy, you know, to see if they could take out Askren. Now it's supposed to be Masvidal. We know how that one ended.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one hell of a debut. You know, yeah. The fight was the fight. It wasn't the most exciting thing, but he got the job done against the former champ. And that's what this gal's doing. She's going against the former champ. She was a champ over at her organization. But if she can win over that crowd, then guess what? Juliana Pena better start sweating. The Ketlin Veras, Irene Aldana's, the ones that want to make a run at that title. Irene, I guess, just recently had a chance, but this is a new champion. Whoever else, even Valentina, she chooses to go up if she doesn't win against Grasso. Same thing, you know, they're all on notice because this chick can captivate the crowd. She's a very, very good talker. She's got a good look to her. She reminds me of Zap from American Gladiators. That's probably a 30-year-old reference, 20-year-old reference. So a lot of people are like, who? But anyone that might remember, she's just got a formidable upper body, lot of strength from judo. And I think she just added muscle regardless. I don't think, you know, that was all genetics. I'm sure she just put in hard work in the gym. But she just has a little bit of this, like, if there's a Captain America, you know, a Captain America female version, she's like, she's got a superhero look to her.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Don, right? Don Cho?
Yeah.
I think he went to one of those American Gladiators, went to our high school, and I think he was part of Don's class.
Yeah, it was the
Blazer or something like that, or one of those guys.
Yeah. It wasn't Blaze, because Blaze was a girl, but you said Laser?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. This is the one where I'm trying to remember it without looking it up, because I can just look it up. But he was a dark skinned guy. He kind of looked like a Hawaiian guy.
Oh, yeah. There was a guy named, I'll just throw names out there. I remember there was a guy named Gemini.
No, that was a black guy. He kind of looked like Apollo Creed.
Laser.
Nitro. Wasn't it Nitro?
I think it was Nitro, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know.
He had a specialty. I think he was good on with the big Q-tip, you know how they would joust or something like that.
Yeah,
it was either that or whatever, but he had a specialty. I forget what it was.
A lot of people don't know this, but Gina Carano was actually an American Gladiator for a time, for like
10 out of here. I didn't know that one.
Yeah, she did American Gladiators for a few episodes, like I want to say 10 or something.
No shit.
Yeah, when they brought it back, she was one of the American Gladiators.
Maybe stir the memory a little bit. So kind of like a guest gladiator or
he did a reboot and she was part of that crew.
After she had fought in Cyborg?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, I mean, it would make sense. That's a badass. She's good looking. Has she recovered from the whole deal where she got canceled?
Well, she has a lawsuit going on.
I haven't seen her in no movies or nothing like that.
Yeah, I haven't seen her in anything, but she's got a lawsuit against Disney, I think.
Hmm. All right. All right. So obviously tomorrow at this time, we will know if, let's see, right now it's 11 my time, 9 your. Yeah, this is when the weigh-ins will start tomorrow, about 9 a.m. Pacific. The fighters will weigh in, and I got to imagine everyone's eyes will be on Harrison. The two title fights, we want those guys to make weight, but I don't see Fajeda and Hill missing. I mean, I know I joked that Hill has gotten big. He's joked that he's gotten big. But yeah. the two title fights, we want them to make weight. I suppose the third one's a title fight too. Does BMF have to get down to 155, or is that the where the gimmick part comes in?
I would think they do. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't imagine Max, who's moving up, not making weight, and Gagey's pretty much a pro through and through. And yeah, Harrison, all eyes will be on Harrison. And then I want to spend a little time on Bo Nickel and Cody Brundage. I thought I saw minus 3,000 for Bo Nickel. Someone posted it as free money. He wanted to win $100, so he put 3,000 to win 8,000. Can you believe that?
I don't care who you are. If you see minus 3,000, bet the other way. It's worth it. You know, this is not a sport it's a sport where anything can happen. Why not? Just bet the other way. Just, if you have $20, throw it on the other guy. Like, that's way too much, especially for a guy like Bo Nickel, who just doesn't have the experience, you know? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bet Holly Holm. I'm going to bet Cody Brundage. The odds should never, ever be that high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would bet it for another reason. Not because I think Brundage can win. I think anyone with 4-ounce gloves can win. You know who this guy reminds me of? Aaron Pico. Except I think Aaron Pico has better hands than Bo Nickel does. But yeah, they both had that high caliber wrestling. So Bo Nickel got the job done in the NCAAs. He's a 3-time champion. And he's coming over and he's just a machine, man. They're calling him American Habib and all that. All that I get. I'm not going to take that away from him. When he's gone out there and fought, I mean, I'm really looking at quite a talent. My beef has been him having a spot on the main card. But whatever, that seems to be obviously a more of a business decision. But the only reason I would bet it is because it's just ridiculous for someone to be minus 3,000 at this point. That's public betting that's doing that. So many things can happen in a fight aside from the whole 4-ounce glove thing. But I can't remember what, but about a week or two ago, we're watching a fight. And, oh, I guess it was Chris Curtis. Remember when he just kind of hurt his hamstring at the end? There's just injuries that can happen.
True.
You know, crazy things that can happen. John Jones almost lost his title because his big toe was falling off. You know what I mean? So it can happen to anyone and everything. And when you're a gambler, it happens to you. The most unexpected things happen to you. So I wouldn't bet on Brundage because I think he can win. I just bet because I have to sting the odds makers. You guys just got out of hand with this, you know, and then it's due to the public.
Yeah, I agree.
The title fights, Hill and Fajeda. Their run-in was cool. It wasn't much of a run-in that, you know, run-ins are thought to be more hostile. But it was cool. But how about Hill kind of getting testing with Mike Bond? Goes from the moment we interviewed Hill for the first time, I thought, this dude's cool. I like this guy. I'm going to cheer for this guy. Hope he does well in the sport. He became world champ. Unfortunate how he lost his title. But I remember him telling us he was an athlete. He played football. He's posted stuff with him wearing it. So him being in a basketball game, I mean, who fucking would think that something like that would happen?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Frank Mir on a motorcycle. You just know that if you ride a motorcycle, your day might be coming. It could be fatal. It could be an accident. But a friendly game of hoops. But Hill in the last few years is just so testy, dude, with the world, with social media, with reporters. And it looks like he's just not going to change. I can't think of too many athletes that have come around and just almost learned to laugh with it. I saw Chris Curtis the other day posting, a guy who when we talk to, he's just so chill. And then, but for some reason, man, social media just, I don't know. Mike Bond was just asking him basically about the injury and when did you have that one practice where you knew, oh, okay, I can do everything now. You know, I can explode off that foot, that leg, and you know, I don't have to think about it or baby it or whatever. And Hill, if I recall, told him, well, I knew I'd be ready to go the day I got injured, which if you think about it, goes, that makes no sense
at all.
Achilles heel blew out today, I would not be thinking, man, I'm ready to go. Yeah. You know, I might be thinking, well, I'll get the surgery today, you know, if they can do it, or tomorrow. And in 9 months, I'll be ready to go. And I can think positively like that, like nothing's stopping me. I'm a world-class athlete. I believe in science. They'll fix me. I'll get my title. That I get. But even his response prior to that didn't make sense. So then Mike Bond said, oh, okay, so will it be at some point in the fight that you think you'll have some level of comfort, you know? And because really his answer didn't make sense. And what does Hill say? Your question makes no sense. What? What? Kind of like you're dumb. And Mike Bond chose the right thing. He just kind of pulled the string, bailed out, and said, hey, fair enough. We're out of here, you know? But I don't know. I want to pull Hill aside and go, bro, do you realize how chill you are and how many fans you are? And you make us laugh. Like, you got some swag to you. Like, why are you kind of becoming cunty, you know?
Because it's the easy way out to a lot of fighters. Like, okay, I'm going to praise Holly Holm, but she kind of had a similar comment where yesterday. Fighters... Huh?
Yesterday?
Yeah, where fighters kind of do that. Well, I'm going to answer your question, but I know you're going to twist around my words and take pieces of, you know, like that sort of thing. I think it's the easy way out rather than answer the question. It's, you know, a lot of fighters are saying these types of things. And for him, to me, what that shows, his level of, it shows that he's uncomfortable. If you're comfortable with a situation, you have no problem answering questions about it, right? If I go into the police station and they're going, bro, you murdered that chick. And I'm like, no, that's impossible. I was doing MMA Junkie. I was doing spinning backflip at that time. I have the evidence. You'd see how cool, calm, and collective I'd be through that interview. But if there was something that made me nervous, I would probably react that way. I think he probably doesn't believe in his own answers. That's why he can't answer it the way he wants to. So instead, he kind of attacks the person that's asking the question, making them.
Which is what Dana does sometimes too. Wow. When you ask him a question that he really doesn't have a perfect answer for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why did you go with Ursig when he's only had 3 fights? Like, this isn't what you've done. We're saying is, this is out of the norm. Can you just explain why this happened? Something like that, right?
Yeah.
Your injury's out of the norm, Jamal. When did you feel like you could do this? Mm-hmm. But I think he knows that there's questions about, hey, did you come back a little sooner than you were supposed to because they gave you more money? And so there's a little fear, you know, that you're not 100%. That's how they're taking it. Dana's taking it as, hey, did Mokaev want a lot of money and you guys don't pay a lot of money or don't go out of your way to pay a lot of money because you might disrupt negotiations for all future fighters. Therefore, you showed him by going with someone else. Yeah, and there's something always kind of just behind the scenes that we've all seen. And we're just getting to the bottom of it. And there's always an answer goes that someone can give where you still protect your brand, mm-hmm. but yet don't come off like a twat.
But they don't look at it that way. So because they've reached celebrity levels, they almost take it as, how dare you? You know, I'm a person that every day everybody's praising me, telling me how cool I am, and you're going to tell me that I'm not? That's kind of that crazy celebrity mentality. So a lot of them will deflect, and they'll do that by asking you a question, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, who do you do what? You know, that sort of thing. And if you're a member of the media, or if you're just a person in the situation, the best way to deal with that is just answer their question. But when you're done answering their question, re-ask your question. You know, don't let them get away with it, because that's what they're trying to do. They want you to forget about what you were asking, and they want you to be uncomfortable so that you tap out. Don't tap out. Answer their question. Come back and re-ask your question. Now that we got that out of the way, why did you do blah, blah, blah? You know? Forcing that answer the question.
Hill should have known better. He should have known that question was coming. So I think he could have said, you know, about 2 months ago, I was wrestling. I had slowly been adding different components of my game to my practices. And this one practice, we went intense. And after the practice, I realized, hey, I can do it all. That's an answer right there. 2 months ago, this guy was my sparring partner, or maybe I was at a guest at a gym, you know, and we did some strength and conditioning and I was able to hang, you know, there has to be that moment. I went through an injury. I'm not a fighter, nor do I have some massive comeback story, but I remember one thing goes when I had my patellar tendon torn, every session would start with me trying to get on a bike. And then from there, we would lead to other exercises. But the warm-up was just 10 minutes on the bike. But because of the knee and the scar tissue, I was only able to cycle forward halfway and back halfway. I couldn't do a full rotation because the knee was so tight. Mm-hmm. And so that's all I would do is forward, back, forward, back, forward, back. Now, each time I'd be able to go a little further, right? We're just talking centimeters here or something like that. But I would notice. So what I started doing was I stuck out my knee outward. And therefore, the revolution would almost come. And then one day, dude, I go, hey, I think I can do it. I kind of stuck out my leg a little. And boom, we went through it. And it felt so good. I was like, hey, you know, and it loosened it up so much that now I could bring in my knee a little bit more and now cycle. And I remember my PT, her name was Janelle. I go, Janelle, look. And she was like, great, you know, kind of gave me a little pat on the back. And so I was able to cycle and now I was a little more sweaty. And so I think it also told her, okay, he's ready for more squats or he's ready for more of this or more of that. So there's little moments where you're like, hey, that's pretty cool, you know, or something that stands out. But when Jamal answered that way, I thought Mike's question wasn't bad to say, well, so then maybe you think at some point in the fight, you'll just probably have a level of comfort with that injury. And I don't think it's a bad question. I think it's a good question that was asked to Chris Weidman about leg kicks. It was before the Tavares fight or one of those. And he goes, I don't want to fear it. So I'm going after it. I'm going to kick with full force. I got to know right away. I got to block it out of my mind. He gave a great answer to a question about a serious injury.
Yeah.
And if you think back to Anderson Silva, what did he do when he beat Nick Diaz? Nick Diaz wasn't a middleweight. That was kind of an opponent that Anderson Silva could handily beat pretty much. But obviously it was a boring fight. Well, I mean, of course it was entertaining. They're stars. They can do their own thing. Remember Nick he laid on the ground, fell asleep. But at the end, when Anderson beat him, he cried. He was emotional. And it wasn't because he beat Nick Diaz. It was because, holy cow, I got through this damn thing.
Yeah. And dude, so like that mentality all starts at the top. If you work in a corporate office and the boss is mouthing off to the cleaning lady or whatever, trust me, everybody's going to follow suit. They're going to be the same way. So because Dana White's like that with the media, fighters feel like, oh, all right, we can do it too. He almost encourages it. And it sucks because at the end of the day, like not everybody covering the sport has the same opinion or the same mentality, but they kind of throw a blanket over all of them. And then they accuse the media of doing the same to them, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's the oddest things. Like some of their arguments are so ridiculous at times, you know? Well, what do you guys know? You've never been in the cage. How could I have lost that decision? MMA decisions. The media said that I won every round. Now all of a sudden, now they know what they're talking about. Like, it's just crazy, dude. But I think that all starts with the top. If the people at the top are going to act that way towards people, then fighters will probably follow suit.
Yeah. That's the big question, is that injury. I think Jamal Hill wins, and I think a lot of it has to do with my feeling about how I've seen Fajeda just take hits and get wobbled, get finished, and Hill doesn't play around. He's got a lot of firepower in both hands. And Fajeda doesn't have this threat of, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to take him off his feet. Then we'll see what he's made of. That's not his game. His game is to prevent the fight from going to the ground and lighting you up. And he can light you up. So I'm not saying he can't light up Hill either. But he's 4 years older, and that chin's been weathered through years of kickboxing. That just happens in kickboxing, man. You take a lot of KOs over there and a lot of knockdowns. So it's happened there. And now he comes over to MMA. He's taken some in MMA. Look, he's fought four times in the last year. That's got to add up too. Those training camps, the weight cuts. Luckily, this is a little bit more. You know, you got the 20-pound allowance because he's not cutting all the way down to middleweight. Can't take away the fact that he became a world champion too. That was pretty amazing. But I just I see a lot of things that point to Hill being able to win this fight as long as he had a full recovery and we see a close to 100% Hill out there. If it's a tentative Hill, then the pendulum swings a little bit.
Yeah. I think if you look at the situation, main event of the biggest card ever, I'm curious to see who's going to pull the trigger first, who's going to not let the moment get to them. I think Jamal Hill has to be aggressive from the get-go. But for as much as we praise Praia for where he's at, look, man, this is going to sound mean, but at the end of the day, he is one-dimensional, right? Mm-hmm. He's not going to submit Jamal Hill. I don't even think he's going to take him down, you know? And it wasn't that long ago that Israel Adesanya was taking him down. So I just think Jamal Hill is the better mixed martial artist, but Pereira could be the better fighter, if that makes sense. You know, that is a possibility as well. So it just depends on who can implement their game first.
Yeah, I agree. I will say this last thing, because I like Jamal Hill. He cracks me up. I listen to his YouTube and see how he recaps fights, and he looks like how I would be with my homies. Man, did you see that fool get dropped? You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope he doesn't just, because I think once you develop a hatred for the media, you condition yourself to develop a hatred for people. That's not the way to live. Right now, dude, he's a high-profile athlete who's worn gold, who has a good chance to wear gold, who's had, he should be fucking smiling and having a good time. Muhammad Ali wasn't perfect, but he did have, he had charisma, and he knew how to at least enjoy like a fight week. And a lot of athletes could learn from a guy like that, you know, because he could almost answer your question and still avoid it, but still make you feel like he answered it. And so I think the media would enjoy it, and he would enjoy it. And so when we all enjoy it, then the fans will enjoy it. But when it's testy or hostile, and it doesn't need to be, it's just a question, bro, about a serious injury. You know, like, simmer down here. It's not the first time you're going to get asked that. Other interviews are lined up. One thing I was going to say was, if you haven't been eating your normal steaks and stuff for a while, I suppose maybe you're just maybe not in a good mood, but that's the role, you know. That's the sport you choose. And others have been able to pull it off, and they're not eating either. The Muslims, shit. Well, any of them that are fighting on this card, they don't eat between sun up and sun down.
Yeah.
That can be pretty tough. And a lot of fighters have actually pulled that off. Sean Whaley is, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, on this card, who are the fighters that you think are at risk to caving to the pressure of the magnitude of the card and the situation? Right off the bat, Kayla Harrison jumps out at me. Jim Miller's kind of been in the spotlight, you know, Mr. 300. Jamal Hill.
You think he's going to cave?
No, I'm just asking. Potential to that.
In performance or just the anxiety pre-fight?
Just the moment, UFC 300, you know, that might get to them. They have a lot of pressure.
Oliveira, maybe?
I actually think it's a good, that's a good one.
He had problems in the past. And then he's on the same card as someone else who could take his shot at the title. And he's got a monster ahead of him, a young monster who is good at putting people where they're uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So him, maybe, I want to say maybe Hill, but I really think Hill's going to win. Nah, man, Nickel's pretty tough. Gagey's tough. Holloway's tough. Jean Willy's tough. I'm going to say right now, I think Jeanan Yan is going to get pummeled. Really? But I do think she's a good fighter, but I just think Zhang Weili's a freight train. So yeah. Who knows, it'll be her. I think Chinese athletes are pretty mentally tough. And then there's Prochaska and Rakic. These guys are kind of like front runners. I think if they get ahead and get a lead, they're tough as nails. But if they fall behind, I don't know if they'll dig deep. Sterling's tough. That dude's tough. Mm-hmm. Cater will be all right. But if Cater gets taken down early and gets waxed, and it's 10-9 via wrestling, I don't see him being able to mount a comeback. Whereas I could see Cater hurting Sterling, but Sterling being able to wrestle his way back in rounds 2 and 3.
That body triangle.
It's nothing against Cater. It's just that wrestling mentality is pretty legit. Holm and Kayla. I guess you present a good point. If Kayla can't get her down, I'd like to see what her face is like in between rounds. If it's frustration or focus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moicano and Turner are dogs. Andrade, I think, can cave. But not just because of 300. I just think she realizes she's pretty far away from where she was at one point, where she was just a tough out everywhere. And now she just hasn't been on a good run. So I think she probably knows maybe the end of her career is coming. She's asking for BMF. Come on. Like, I just don't think that really resonates. And I don't think it's her that has that type of swag if we're going to do a BMF for females.
Mm-hmm.
And then to finish out the card, Figgy and Garbrandt. Figgy, maybe, man. Figgy, maybe. I think Miller and Green are tough. They don't quit. But Figgy, I thought, quit against Marino in one the last fight. Like, he was all up in him pre-fight week and mad dogging, you know. But in that fight, I think you could just see it in his face, like, this ain't going the way I thought it was going to go. And then eventually he lost. And then he's sitting there applauding him and all that, because I think he knew, okay, I'm done with 25. It was probably a mess. I probably stayed here longer than I should have, but I could see him maybe if he can't put Garbrandt away. And if Garbrandt decides to wrestle, which he usually doesn't use that too much, then he seems like he could buckle.
Mm-hmm.
Is yours just hate Kayla, or do you co-sign on any of the ones I said?
Yeah, a lot of them. I think Cody can cave in a different way. I think he, being a guy that usually would headline a card like this, you know, something like, or be a co-main, I think he might want to put on a show and be a little too aggressive early on, especially, you know, being that first fight. I could see the reverse and being too aggressive in that fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, possibly, man. I'm looking at the headlines one more time. I haven't seen it, but it doesn't mean we can't promote it. Mike Bond got to interview Mark Coleman. Mark Coleman will be part of the BMF festivities. So that'll be cool. Coleman, a few weeks ago, rescued his parents but lost his dog in a fire at the parents' house, if I'm not mistaken. And that's why, as a former champion, he's being designated as a bad motherfucker. You know, that's why they wanted him. I think it was Holloway that asked to present the belt. But I think it's, you know what's cool, goes, I just think it's a historic card. And I think it's great for the UFC to probably hopefully lob a payday to him, acknowledge him, make him part of this. But I really hope that, hey, obviously you're coming, you know, maybe they'll feature him in some sort of a fan setting and he can get a, like an ambassador pay for being there. I like it when I see those types of things. I've seen Fry in the audience, and I hope they've invited him. Not just, hey, here's your two tickets, but be with the fans. But here's a paycheck, you know, because mm-hmm. we wouldn't be at UFC 300 if these dudes didn't do some of the stuff they did in our sport.
Yeah. I think he should put the title. He said that he doesn't think that, he thinks the UFC maybe already has a plan for that. But I think that would be super cool if you were to able to do that. And I think you have to do a good job of mixing your the history of your sport with the fighters of today for that audience, you know. And I think that's a good opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you want a former champion who's beloved to tell MMA fans, they flew me out, they took care of me, I got an opportunity to mingle with fans, you know. But by took care of me, it means not just here's a $50 voucher at the buffet. No, like gave me, I mean, the UFC has the money to do this, with a lot of their fighters and give back to them in certain ways. But so the BMF thing isn't a sure thing. He might not wrap the belt around them.
No, he's only been invited, but he hasn't been told that he's going to be the one that puts the belt.
I wonder why not.
He said that he believes they already have a plan for that.
Oh. Huh. Couldn't, well.
Look, the only thing I can think of, although I don't know if you want to be
promoted. Masvidal did it to Gaethje, right?
Yeah, and Duran, didn't he do it to Masvidal?
No, The Rock did it to Masvidal. Oh, Duran walked out with Masvidal. Maybe Tyson. Coleman can walk out with Holloway. Like a lot, Dana can control so many things, you know, that I just like to see him featured somehow so that Anik can say, and walking him out is the former heavyweight champion. Give them a little bit of that glory, man, after what he went through. Give him some money to help him, get a new dog for one and help him rebuild. Dude, that guy's been through a lot too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm anxious to see what the new or what that might be, what the plan might be.
Yeah.
And then isn't there some big announcement? I heard it may have already gotten leaked that it's not the gloves, new gloves or something like that. Have you heard?
I don't know what it is. I was hoping it was gloves, but I do want to touch on one thing. Did you hear Holly Holm's comments about Ronda?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a great answer. That was a perfect answer. Like all these, we're always harping on, you should have said this, you should have said that. I thought that was a great answer for her to say. And if I'm wrong, I promise you Ronda Rousey probably heard that, and I promise you she was pissed.
Didn't she say she thought she won the fight? Something like that.
I don't know. Oh my God. She says, well, that she was undefeated, right? Even after the two losses.
And everyone in the audience clapped. It was like a Oprah or it The was, View. I don't know what it was. I just remember I heard or DeGeneres, whatever her name is. I think it might have been that. And everyone clapped. I swear to God, if I would have been in the audience, I would have said, hold on a second. Hold on. Why are you all clapping? She literally got kicked in the head and then pummeled with hammer fists. Poor Herb Dean had to save her. But she really looked like she was just not. We knew she wasn't conscious, but she looked like she was dead. Of course, that's usually what you look like when you really, really get flatlined.
Mm-hmm.
How is that a win? You know, like. And she's smart. Rhonda's smart. I just thought, I know that question's coming. What am I going to say? Hey, look, I'm going to put that one behind me. I'm just going to start a new streak. You know, it was a learning lesson. But if her and I meet again, I will whoop her ass. Then the audience can clap for you. You're talking about the next fight. But the one that just happened, you got fucked up. You didn't win that. You're no longer undefeated.
It's nice. Right? It's a crazy mentality, but yeah. But that's why you go on now then. Because if you do that on First Take or something, they're gonna check you. You imagine First Take. You think Stephen A. Smith's going to sit there and go, yeah, you know what? You're right. You did win those fights. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Video team in the background, can you change the graphics? Take that loss off? She's still undefeated, she said. And I'm convinced.
You tell them, champ. That ain't going to happen. They're going to go, is you crazy?
Ridiculous. All 26 fighters are on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. Go check it out. They all had interesting things to say about their upcoming fights, and there's a lot of huge names. I can't tip my hat enough to the UFC for doing something like this. It's going to be at the cost of a couple future cards. Fine. I guess we'll get over it. We tune into all of them anyway, Goz and I do. Not just because it's a job. We really are hardcore fans, and the UFC cards can find ways to deliver in many ways. Even when it's on paper, you see a fight where you're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And the next thing you know, on Monday, you're like, holy cow, did you see said fight? It was incredible. But a lot of our job has to do with what we see on paper, what we're previewing, what we're looking forward to. And if it's not sexy, we tell you. But this one's sexy. Sexiest one we've ever seen. And Goz and I are going to do the watch along on Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. We're going to do all the cards. All the fights. All the fights are getting done. All right. And I'm going straight from. So Goz is producing Fada's show, and I'll be on with Fada. I don't know if I'm on the whole hour, but If it is, then fine. We're going to be previewing the event. I think she said she was going to have two co-hosts, so I'm going to see if maybe I can take the first half, and that way I can decompress for a sec and then just be ready to go from one thing to the next. That way, even if she goes a little overtime, a minute or two, we're fine. But yeah, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific for the watch-along, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific for the preview show. I just want to say one last thing here, and then I'll let go say whatever. PFL is having another fight card this week. You know, the only way the UFC and MMA is going to get better is if the competition does well as well. And look, they're on ESPN2. That's on most satellite cables or in cable systems. They're also on ESPN Plus, where you get your UFC stuff. And they have some really, really good fighters. And look, I applaud them for buying Bellator and combining. And so their regular season is going to be that much more stacked. Patricky Frady versus Clay Collard is going to be a great fight. You don't want to miss that one. So, you know, check it out. They're at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. They're in Vegas. If you're in Vegas to catch the UFC after the weigh-ins, the ceremonials, you could head over to the Virgin or the theater at the Virgin Hotels and check out some fights. It's cozy. There'll be a lot of MMA fans and notables there. Go check it out. And lastly, thank you to everyone that's caught our show at any point in the last 17 years, whether it was 10 minutes, every show, whatever, we really appreciate you. Goes, any final words?
Yeah, there are actually some maniacs that have listened to every episode. So props to you guys, and thank you for all the support over all the years. It's really changed our lives. And trust me, there's a lot of times where you're going through your phone and you have to clear memory or something. You're going through and you just look at things and say, wow, I can't believe I did that shit. Like, I can't believe I was there at this thing or I met these people. All that is because of the support that you guys give us. So we really appreciate it.
Hear, hear. All right, folks, we're out of here. We'll see you all on Saturday. Go out and be a champion. Take care.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.